Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show.
Hello, welcome back to Real Estate Investor MBA for another great interview that we have lined up for you today. My name is Jeremy Moyer, and one of your hosts. Please check out our website at realestateinvestormba.com, where we have all our past interviews in video, audio, and written transcript formats. We also are available on several podcast platforms such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Please subscribe and download all of our past episodes to listen to them. A lot of great content has been shared by our prior guests. If you like what we're providing in value, please give us a 5-star review and leave some feedback. In doing so, more people will be able to find us and listen to the insight from our interview guests. So I'm excited to announce our guest today. Greg Boots is back with us from last week for part two. If you haven't listened to that one yet, you got to check it out. A lot of good information was shared. Greg, it's great to have you back this week.
Hey, thanks, Jeremy. It's my pleasure.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
So if this is the first time, Greg, that our listeners are listening to you speak, and if they haven't listened to part one yet of the interview, can you just give everyone like a high-level overview of your background, specific
sure.
niche?
Yeah, absolutely. My background is that I'm an attorney, and for the last 20-plus years, I've practiced in the area of tax planning, retirement planning, asset protection, and I've really developed a niche over the last 6 or 7 years in regards to tax-free wealth creation. And that's what I really enjoy. It allows me to be creative. And I'm an investor myself. And this is a fantastic tool for people. Plus, when we tie it in with asset protection and tax planning, it works phenomenally well.
Perfect. That's awesome. And what was the name of your company?
The name of my company is Executive Wealth Solutions.
Okay, perfect. All right. So last week, we discussed utilizing life insurance policies as a cash vault that the policyholder can borrow from time to time. I just want to kind of take a little deeper dive into that. So when structuring these, are there different types of policies that a policyholder can, I guess, open up, create?
Yeah, great question. And you'll generally find people in one of two camps because there's two different types of policies we can utilize. Dividend paying whole life policies and what is known as index universal life policies. And they're both phenomenal vehicles. I'm not an advocate of one over the other. At the end of the day, it really comes down to what is a person looking to achieve because they have their own unique characteristics.
Perfect. And then are there pros and cons to each? Can we kind of
Absolutely, because nothing's perfect. And so with the whole, the approach is the same with both policies. We're building them around capital accumulation because the intent is to create something that we can actively utilize throughout our lifetime. And my clients that tend to gravitate toward whole life policies, dividend paying whole life policies, do so generally for two primary reasons. One is in regard to ready access to capital. I'm talking about you pay your premium today. Most companies, you can turn around and start accessing that money tomorrow. And then they also like how they grow. They're growing based upon annual dividends that can be declared by the board of directors. And so it's consistent growth over the years. It doesn't have anything to do with stock market performance. And so that's the real strengths of the whole life policies. One unique characteristic of it, I always hesitate to call it a drawback. It's just a characteristic of the product is that it's very rigid in nature, in that it has to be set up for a predetermined length of time. The shortest period is 7 years or 10 years or 20 years, but whatever that duration is that you pick, that's what you have with that policy, and we can't deviate from that. And unfortunately, I've done a lot of reviews over the years for people that had existing policies where they're actually having to pay into it for their entire lifetime, and they were completely unaware of it. And so that's one of the unique features, that it's a very rigid platform, but that doesn't mean it's bad. My clients that want to access money immediately, they love whole life policies. The other type of policy is what is known as an index universal life policy, and it grows differently. It has two different growth buckets. It has an interest account and then also an index account. Interest account, pretty straightforward. Most companies right now are paying 3%, low interest rate environment. We would never set up an IUL where all somebody wanted to do was put their money in the interest account. A whole life policy would be better for that person. Where we're utilizing as a backup account. Where we get the really good growth potential is in the index account. And it grows based upon linking to a market index, like the S&P 500. We're not buying the S&P 500 like in a mutual fund, because in a mutual fund, the S&P goes up. Market tanks, it goes down. So we're linking the growth. So in the course of our 12-month measuring period, the S&P goes up in value, that gain gets forever locked into the account. Worst case scenario, S&P goes down in value, we have a zero return at that point in time. Can't lose any money, but we didn't capture any growth. So my clients that like IULs are those that don't want to borrow on day one. Because one of the characteristics is you can't borrow until the second policy year in an IUL. And then also they want the opportunity to have a higher potential return based upon linking to the market index as opposed to just the dividends. One of the strengths that I really like, and I'm not an advocate of one over another, but just speaking for myself as an investor, is that I really like the flexibility of the IUL. I'm not locked into a particular duration. I have a lot of flexibility with the premium. But what I give up is I gave up the ability to borrow until the second year. And I have to be more diligent watching it and seeing how the market's doing to capture the growth. So it's a more of a hands-on type of product. But so many people are in those, whole life's the only way to go, or IUL's the only way to go. No, it's like saying there's only one way to make money in real estate. That's not true. It's what is it that is best for you?
No, that's a great explanation, Greg. So if I heard you correct, if structured correctly, you can't lose money in the policies, in either a dividend paying policy, the whole life, or the IUL with the indexed, with the S&P or whatever index, right?
Correct. So we're receiving dividends can vary. That's not just a flat projection. Well, it's an illustration, and so they can vary over time, but we'll receive that consistent growth. We're not creating something to pay into it for lifetime. We want it to be able to sustain itself so we can utilize money for other things. With the IUL, again, it's a bit more hands-on. We can't lose money if the market goes down, but we don't want to flatline for 3 years either. And so, we might utilize the interest account, but we're never retracing our steps like we were back in 2008 when the market tanked and it took all the way to 2013 to get back to that level. We're never having to retrace our steps. It's called the floor in an IUL, where it can't go below, worst case scenario is zero. Some of them have, you're going to get a 1% or 2% guarantee.
Okay. And then is there a ceiling usually attached to that?
Yeah, great question. And I'm going to give you the weasel attorney answer is that it depends. So, because just like there's a lot of different indexes out there, you know, S&P, Russell, Dow, there's a lot of different indexing options that you can use. And some of them have no ceiling. So you could, if it goes up 80%, you could capture the 80%. Others might have a cap where that's our ceiling of 9.5%, 10%. It really just depends upon the particular product. So three key terms in an IUL. The floor, that's where if the market goes down, what's our worst case scenario, a 0, a 1, or a 2% return. Then we have the cap, market goes up, how much do we capture? And then the last thing is what is known as the participation rate. And that's the amount of gain that we actually participate in. So if I have a participation rate of 100%, market goes up 10%, I'm capturing the entire 10%. If I have a participation rate of 50% and it goes up 10%, I'm capturing 50%. So we're looking at all of those different factors when we're choosing our indexing options. And it's not an all or nothing allocation. We can have it spread up amongst many indexes as we want to.
Interesting. So it sounds like when you're setting this up, you have to have someone really know what they're doing to be able to do it correctly.
Yeah, and this is true with both policies. It all comes down to the design. The design is the most important thing. And then the second most important thing is having an ongoing relationship with whomever it is that's created that for you. Because it's not just a policy that's going to pay out this death benefit when you pass away. It's all about using it while you're alive. And if you don't know how to use it, then it wasn't worth creating to begin with.
No, it makes sense.
You need somebody to guide you through how to utilize that.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. Thanks for explaining that, Greg.
Yes.
So from like a financial planning perspective, since it's kind of like in the overall picture of that, if we just compare it against like other qualified plans versus the policy, like IRAs, 401ks, are there like those investment plans, is there limits to the premium amount, policy size that a policyholder must comply with?
A great question. So we don't have those built-in limits like we do within our IRAs and our 401ks and our 403bs. It all comes down to what a person can afford, and we build the policy around that. I have clients run a huge range, $2,000 a year to $350,000 a year. We're still building the policy in the exact same way, focusing on capital accumulation. But at the end of the day, because I've read a lot of books and I've heard people ask this question and make this statement saying, you should take every penny you have and put it into a policy. Absolutely not. I mean, I love these. These are great vehicles for me, but I still invest in real estate. I still actively trade. I do a lot of hard money lending. And so it should be viewed as one piece of your overall structure. It's because you want to still have funds to do other activities. So it's a great vehicle, but it is not the be all and end all. It's one piece of all of the other activities that you're doing.
That makes sense. A holistic picture
Absolutely.
Of everything.
Now, if you want to have that diversity, that's what's going to make you successful, not only in your investing, but really importantly in regard to your retirement years as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So, Greg, I know we've talked a little bit offline over the last couple months. There's some advanced strategies that investors can take advantage of within these policies or just how you structure it. Can you kind of give the listeners an idea of what that looks like and what options are out there?
Sure. So one of the ones that is absolutely phenomenal, it's known as premium finance. And at its core, it's still that IUL. We're designing it the exact same way. But what we're doing is we're getting a lender to pay 2/3 of our premium. So let's say, for example, my premium is $20,000. I'm paying $20,000 a year for 5 years, and then I'm done. During that same period of time, the lender's coming to the table and doing pretty close to a match, putting in that same $20,000. Year 6 or 10, they're putting in that $40,000, 100% of that premium. And it the use of that leverage is such phenomenal long-term growth. I use this a lot for a lot of my physicians and dentists and other people that have businesses where they want to fund more for their retirement, but they don't want all of the constraints that they have in terms of making contributions for their employees. This is a phenomenal vehicle because not only do we have excellent capital accumulation, it creates an amazing tax-free retirement income stream for us. And it's such a great tool that lenders are just beating down the doors trying to get involved because they're 100% secured in the investment. We're not having to put up any assets as collateral whatsoever. The lender is just looking to the cash value of the policy as collateral. And so it's a very easy transaction. It's an invisible transaction. It doesn't show up on our credit report at all. It's just a deal between the company and the lender. And it allows for just amazing growth. I typically, for people, would have this be a phase two type of strategy where they have the policy that they're actively utilizing now. And then they have this other one where we have the lender paying as a more of a long-term wealth accumulation vehicle. But it works so phenomenally well, especially for younger individuals in their, you know, their 20s and 30s. Their premiums are less than what they would be putting into a 401k. And you're only doing that for 5 years. And it will be guaranteed tax-free when we take the money out. And that's the beauty of it. These, and I don't recall if I mentioned it in our last conversation, but these insurance policies, these are contracts. They're not dictated by the government in the future. So in it's where the attorney in me comes out. In the Constitution, we have a clause called the contract clause, and it says, yep, government can change the law going forward. But those of us that have existing contracts in place, i.e. an insurance policy that we can access the money tax-free, yep, government can change the law, but for all of us that have these in place right now, we'll always be able to access the capital tax-free. They can't change the rules on us. And one thing that I encourage all the listeners to and viewers to go and just see, ask your CPA, because I teach a lot of classes to CPAs, ask your CPA what an IRA stands for. Ask your broker what an IRA stands for. Everybody's going to say individual retirement account. That is absolutely incorrect. If you look at the IRS publication, it's an individual retirement arrangement. And who gets to dictate the terms of the arrangement? The government does. So that's why I'm a big fan of these vaults, these policies, because I'm locked in no matter what goes on in the future. And so it's a phenomenal vehicle. Got a little sidetracked there, Jeremy, but yeah,
that's interesting to know. So you mentioned a bank actually helps you pay your premium. So that's, I guess, investors, at least real estate investors, can appreciate the leverage banks provide. When buying, they can buy a larger asset building because they could borrow a certain percent of funds to do that. So it's almost
very similar.
Very
similar. Yeah, instead of spending, you know, $100,000 on one rental property, why don't I buy four by putting $25,000 down? Same concept. I'm getting, you know, two-thirds leverage on the premium payment. And that's what allows it to grow exceptionally well. And I don't even personally pay the lender back. The lender is paid off in the future from the cash value of the policy. Now, there's a couple of things that you have to be eligible to participate. You have to be at least 18 because you have to enter into a contract. You have to be making at least $100,000. It's not $3 million like it used to be for other types of policies. And you can't be over the age of 65. Other than that, it's wide open for people to utilize.
Okay. Let's just go through some of the inner workings of this. So is there banks kind of lined up willing to lend on stuff like this? Because collateral is basically cash.
Correct.
Right. Correct. So, they have great protection, I guess you could say, from a security standpoint.
They are 100% secured, and that's why they love them. If a person decides to cancel their policy, let's say, there's more than adequate cash value within the policy to pay the lender immediately back. Person passes away. death benefit is at least $1 million, more than enough to pay the lender back. And there's different types of premium finance, and one of them, we have to be making at least $3 million and we have to pledge millions of dollars in assets. With this one particular model, the banks love them because we're submitting them in tranches where there's thousands going in at a given point in time. And so we're not taking a policy for Jeremy and going out and finding a lender. We're submitting thousands at once, and then lenders are coming to the table to fund all of these policies. So lenders love them. And as an investor, I love the overall concept and also what it does for me in realities, because I'm utilizing that same leverage that I would be in my real estate transactions.
That makes sense. So then the repayment terms to the bank, like you mentioned, it gets paid off from the returns from the policy. And the lending terms, are they fixed rates? Are they floating rates? What's that look like?
So we actually have 10, since the lender paying in for 10 years, mm-hmm. we have 10 separate loans going on. And it's LIBOR plus 1.75. So right now the rates are 2.75%. Now, in the previous types of policies that we were talking about, the IULs and the whole life policies where we could go in there and borrow money, you know, whole life immediately, IUL, we wait a year. With these, since the only collateral that's being utilized is the cash value, we can't borrow from the policy until that lender is paid off, which is typically 15 years out. And that's why this is a phase two, or somebody's just looking from a retirement standpoint, because we're getting the utilization of the leverage, but we can't go in there and take the lender's collateral away. And so at a future point in time, the lender's paid off from the cash value, and then that's when we can start accessing the capital within the policy.
Gotcha. So this is more from a thought process standpoint. It's more planting seeds for 15, 20 years down the road, because you'll have a larger tree, a larger asset, correct?
Exactly. Yes. And that's why the vast majority of my clients that have these in place already have a whole life or an IUL that they're accessing capital from. And this one is the premium finance is there for a longer term growth,
I think. That makes sense. Now, for real estate investors, business owners, are there special ways that they can take advantage, or just maybe special techniques or strategies that they can utilize with policies, either their personal policies, or can you even have policies for the business?
Yeah, we can have policies for the business. Generally, I wouldn't recommend it because it becomes an asset of the business, and we want to have the ability to access that capital personally. So we can have our business pay our premium. Now, it ends up, in that respect, becomes a tax wash. Yes, it's a deduction to the company, but it's still income to me because I'm the one that is able to access the capital tax-free. Now, why do people do this? Well, in my previous firm, we had 200 employees, and my partners and I wanted to put more aside than we could within our 401ks, and so the firm paid our premiums. We didn't have to offer it to any of the employees. Yep, deduction of the company, but taxable income for us. Now, if you have a company that's taxed specifically as a C corporation, doesn't matter if it's a proper C corporation or an LLC taxed as a C corporation, we can use that premium finance model. This is a little bit more complex. It's called split dollar. But basically what's happening is my business is loaning the money to me for that premium, and it's treated as an asset on the books of the business. And then we have the lender paying 2/3 of the premium in there. And what ends up happening is either when the lender gets paid off, I pay off my business from the cash value, or when I pass away, that my business will receive the loan payout from the death benefit of my policy. Any sports fans, Jim Harbaugh has something very similar with Michigan. And instead of Michigan paying him $2 million directly each year, they're loaning the money into a policy for him. This is a premium finance type of policy. And when he passes away, it'll pay that money back to Michigan. And he will have a ridiculous amount of money. It's tens and tens of millions of dollars that will be coming out to him tax-free. And so nonprofits, C corporations, we can do that. Yes, we can run it through our other businesses, but in those respects, that premium payment is still taxable to us.
Interesting. It seems you can get pretty
creative.
We can get
very creative.
Okay. Simplistic point of view, approach, I guess you could say. Investor has a policy. Let's just say it's the normal, more straightforward, the whole life or the IUL, right? They have amount that they can borrow from. They could borrow from that and relend it out, or they could borrow that amount, go buy a property. And are there like structured payment plans they have to make back, or can they treat it as like, you know, I'm gonna borrow this money for 12 months and pay it as a balloon?
Yeah, great question, because I completely glossed over this or didn't even bring it up. It's great that it grows in value, but if we can't access the money, what's the point? So we're borrowing the money from our policies. Whole life IUL, it doesn't matter. There's no formal term. So my clients that flip, do hard money lending, they're generally just paying it back as a balloon. I generally pay mine back monthly, but if I don't, last December, I didn't make a payment. Nobody's coming after me because there's no formal requirement. And so the last loan that I took out for an investment, borrowed $100,000 out of my policy for an investment that paid me a fixed 9%. The thing is with these policies, why they're so different than utilizing money from other sources is that when I borrowed that $100,000 out of my policy, the insurance company treats that $100,000 as still internally in the policy. So for me, having an IUL, during that point in time, the S&P went up 9.5%, captured 9.5% on the 100 grand that was being used for an investment that was generating 9%. Do the same thing in a whole life policy where I borrow the money out and the company still pays the dividends. So we're capturing a spread on our money. I could take it out of my brokerage account or savings account or any other account, but then that money's no longer working for me. When I utilize it for my policy, I'm capturing the internal growth and I'm getting the external returns on my investment. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And there's no formal payment terms. In game on my policies, it's going to be a tax-free retirement income source for me. I'm never going to pay it back. And when I pass away, all that will happen is that the amount, total amount that I've borrowed throughout my lifetime and never paid back just gets taken off the top of the death benefit, and my wife and kids are still well taken care of.
So then the loan payment that you're paying the insurance company back, is that LIBOR plus, you said, 1 point?
That one, again, is a depends answer. Generally, whole life, it's a fixed. It could be anywhere from 5. I've seen them still as high as 8, but 5 is the norm. With an IUL, it's generally based upon a bond index called Moody's 30-Year Corporate Bond Index, 4% right now.
Okay, so in that scenario, if it was the 4% one, hard money loan, 5%, that's a, or sorry, 9%, that's a 5% yield. And then you mentioned the money was still in the account, capturing those gains from the market. So it's almost like you're stacking them on top of each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. So I'm making wealth in both sides, even though the money from here was used to fund this investment.
Interesting. So then the 5% yield difference, does that money go into the policy, or does that stay in your pocket?
The 5% will stay in your pocket because it's done externally. So this is where it's very different than like a self-directed IRA or a solo 401k, where we're investing internally inside of that retirement account. Yep. and the gains need to stay in there. With this, when I borrow that money out of my policy, the gains that I get over here are coming to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm able to participate in that return right now.
That's tremendous.
Yeah, it works amazing.
Wow. My mind's just kind of going.
There's so many different things that we can do with it. And it's truly about utilizing it. That's why we're creating it, is to actively utilize it. And we can, they don't even ask what we're using the money for. I have clients use it to pay down consumer debt. I've purchased a couple of cars with mine, and I'm still capturing that internal growth within the policy.
Oh, that's great. Now, Greg, is there any, we're kind of coming down to the wire on the program here. Is there any other advanced level strategies or anything you want to mention that investors can kind of look into more?
I would say that if you're a business owner, there's a lot of different opportunities, but we would have to have a discussion on how your business is taxed. That's really what it comes down to. If you're a nonprofit or have a nonprofit, there's a lot of phenomenal things that we can do, not only to benefit you directly from a tax-free standpoint, but also benefit your nonprofit down the road. But a lot of it is just, you know, where you're at from a tax standpoint.
Okay. And then for, actually, I just thought of this, for kids' education.
Yeah.
Like, you can take policies out on your children to help fund education. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. So I have clients all the time, and grandparents, instead of putting the money into a 529 where it can go up and then it can go down, they're putting it in a policy. And then while the children are in school, borrowing out of the policies to fund their education, and it becomes a phenomenal long-term growth vehicle for those little kids as well. And the nice thing about it is being the parent or the grandparent, because I have three boys and set up policies for them when they were young. Two of them are in college now. My wife and I, we own those policies. Those boys do not own those policies. We decide when they get them. If I gave my 22-year-old this policy today, the money would be gone tomorrow. And so it's being that it's great to create that vehicle for them, but not all children are the same when it comes to money management skills. And so my wife and I get to utilize it, and we dictate when it's going to transfer.
Okay. And then is that looked, I know we're going a little this way, but is that kind of looked at from financial aid the same way?
Great question. No, it's not. It's an exempt asset, just like your home. And so you could have a policy on a child or even on yourself where you have millions and millions of dollars of cash in there. It's an exempt asset. And so for financial aid qualification purposes, it's off the table.
Wow. That's tremendous. That right there is tremendous.
Yeah.
So Greg, I mean, I'm so thankful that you agreed to come back, because all this information today was well worth it. So in closing, just in case those haven't listened to you before, got the information from the last show, can you tell our listeners a little bit about how they can, you know, get more information, learn more information that you just talked about, or how can they contact you if they wanted to have a discussion?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's a real individualized design. And so you can go to my webpage. It's www.executiveWS.com. And I have a series of videos on there for more information, so you can learn more about the strategies. You can fill out a form and we can get a consultation set up, because it's, again, it's not a one size fits all. One type of policy is not the best for everybody. It really depends upon what it is that you're wanting to achieve. And it all comes, like with any type of investment, it comes down to the numbers. And we want to make sure those numbers work for you.
Makes total sense. That those individual conversations are important. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's an ongoing relationship on how to properly utilize it throughout your lifetime.
Perfect. Well, right. Greg, thank you so much for your time today. Everyone, this is Greg Boots with Executive Wealth Solutions. I'm Jeremy Moyer with Real Estate Investor MBA. We'll look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you.